قعدت قدام الجدار وبحلكت عيني فيه ورحت بعيد وين كانت الأرض فاضية ومراح ودار عمي قدامنا. مش تفتشروا دار عمي بعيدة، احنا وياه مساجنين في نفس الحوش ناكل مع بعض ودايما سهرانين وقاعدين مع بعض، وامي وعمتي بخبزن بنفس الطابون والدار باب الدار. واجي الجدار وقطعنا عن بعض، يا كشلي يا كشلي، وهالكيت لازم اسوق 45 دقيقة بتصدقوا، وامرك عن اجل من يهودي عشان هو يخليني اشوف دار عمي. انا هالكيت خليني اكلكم عن تاريخ اليهود، عاملين زي السرطان ينحشوا ارضنا يوم ورا يوم واقفين لنا مثل المية في الزور.
It all began when anti-Semitic feelings in Europe reached their height. A French Jewish soldier named Alfred Dreyfus was falsely accused of spying in 1893. His trial was very controversial in France and brought about a great deal of anti-Semitic hostilities throughout the world. Over the years, the idea of a Jewish state began to sound more and more appealing to Jews all around Europe who were tired of being prejudiced against and oppressed. At first, they considered assimilation into other countries. And when that didn't work, one man by the name of Theodor Herzl realized they were going to be unwanted wherever they went. And so he published a book titled The Jewish State. Theodor Herzl's influence continued to spread rapidly, and his radical idea appealed to more and more people every day. Jews wanted their own homeland, and Europeans wanted them out. To them, it seemed like a win-win situation. In 1897, the Jews made their movement official, calling upon the creation of the Zionist state, more a political movement than a religious one. In 1897, the first Zionist Congress was held in Switzerland, which issued the Basel Program and established the World Zionist Organization. The Zionists discussed finding a homeland for Jews in countries such as Uganda and Argentina. There was no immediate preference for Palestine. Not until 1906, when the Fourth Zionist Congress decided to establish a national Jewish home in Palestine, after the efforts towards Argentina were decided against in 1904. Despite all their efforts, however, the Zionists still weren't able to gain the support of powerful European countries just yet.
After the end of World War I and the demise of the Ottoman Empire, Britain and France secretly divided up the Middle East under the Sykes-Picot Agreement in 1916. Named after British Mark Sykes and French diplomat Francois George Picot. Britain gained control of Palestine, while France gained control of present-day Syria and Lebanon. At the same time, however, took place a secret agreement between Hussein bin Ali of Mecca and Henry McMahon, the British High Commissioner in the Arab countries. McMahon promised the Arab nations Britain would help them gain their independence as long as they revolted against the Ottoman Empire. The naive Arab governments agreed and brought down the fall of the Ottoman Empire as promised. Little did they know that Britain had secret meetings and agreements to hand over Palestine to the Jews in order to create a homeland there. This would benefit Europe, as they feared that if the Arab nations remained united, it could bring about Europe's demise, and they could potentially be the most powerful people of the world. Now, that didn't sit very well with our dear old European leaders, and so they knew if they placed the Jewish conflict right in the heart of Arabia, the Arabs could never climb to the top, and instead remain divided and at the mercy of Europe.
If only Muslims at the time saw through Britain's fake promises and phony smiles, we would not be where we are today, still fighting for the freedom of Palestine and struggling to break free from corruption. Instead, they allowed themselves to be blindly led, and the few who realized there was something that needed to be done, well, they held conventions, and eventually sat back as time and time again, Jews gained the upper hand in the Middle East. On November 2nd, 1917, one of the most famous declarations, the Balfour Declaration, was sent out to a British Zionist leader from the British Foreign Secretary, Arthur J. Balfour. It read, His Majesty's government view with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people. and will use their best endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this object, it being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of the existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine, or the rights and political status enjoyed by Jews in any other country. This declaration strengthened the British mandate to establish a Zionist state in Palestine for the unwanted Jews. As a result, in the following year, a large-scale Jewish migration occurred, and as the Jewish population increased in Palestine, the Palestinians grew frustrated and tried to oppose, resulting in many violent riots.
Almost 2 years later, in 1919, Britain, who was beginning to rethink their plan, established the King Crane Commission in order to investigate whether or not the Middle Eastern regions were ready for self-rule. American President and adamant peace advocate Woodrow Wilson chose Charles Crane and Henry Churchill King to carry out this investigation. To their dismay, they found that the Arabs were ready to break free from the British rule and desired independence. It became clear that the brute force was the only way to officially establish a Jewish state in Palestine. One of them even noted, "Nor can the erection of such a Jewish state be accomplished without the gravest trespass upon the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine." Ironic much?
On the tragic night of April 9, 1948, the Zionists, led by Menachem Begin, mercilessly surrounded the village of Deir Yassin, a village located just on the outskirts of Jerusalem. The army only gave the sleeping residents a 15-minute warning to leave all their belongings and houses behind and flee for their lives. They then proceeded into the village of 700 people, killing and attacking 254, mostly old men, women, and children, and 300 others. However, the massacre didn't seem to satisfy the Zionists. Begin's army proceeded to toss many of the bodies into the village well, and trafficked 150 captured women and children through the occupied Jewish section of Jerusalem. The Haganah and the Jewish Agency publicly denounced the atrocity, while on the sidelines did all they can to prevent the Red Cross from investigating the attack. It actually wasn't until 3 days later that the Zionist armies permitted Jacques de Rainier, chief representative of the International Committee of the Red Cross, into Jerusalem to visit the village. Clearly, the Zionists weren't wanted in Palestine. Still, Britain and France remained committed to Zionism.
On May 14, 1948, Arabia's worst fears came true. The Declaration of Independence of the State of Israel was publicly read in Tel Aviv. That night, the British Mandate of Palestine expired. Palestine went from the hands of the British directly to the hands of the Zionists, with no say in the matter. Just minutes after midnight, the United States recognized Israel as a legitimate country. According to his wife, President Truman believed the formation of Israel was his most difficult decision as president. He often stayed up debating with himself. Should he support it? His conscience told him no, but his advisors, all of whom were Jewish and adamant Zionists, pushed him to agree. Clark Clifford, Truman's legal counsel, urged Truman to approve it immediately. He said that Jews needed refuge after the Holocaust. At the same time, though, the American Department of State and the highly respected Secretary of State, George Marshall, advised against it. Marshall actually went as far as to say if Truman recognized Israel, he would vote against him in the upcoming election and resign. Desperate to grab some Jewish votes, and after much debate and consideration, President Truman made his decision, and Israel was born at the stroke of midnight. The United States has taken sides. Meanwhile, many attempts to convert the Israeli-Arab armistice agreements into peace treaties failed. The Arabs insisted that the refugees must be permitted to return to their own homes, and that Israel makes territorial compromises before they entered any peace talks. Israel decided that these demands would undermine its security, and so they refused them. Frequent incursions and attacks by Arabian militaries were made, which Israel answered with forceful retaliation. Egypt refused to permit Israeli ships to use the Suez Canal, and blockade